This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hi, everybody. Cheryl from Unleashed. And today I am very glad to have Catherine Carver with us. And she wrote a gorgeous book. And we'll discuss that. Welcome, Catherine. I'm glad that I have you on the show. This is going to be a very interesting show.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm happy to be here.
So before we get into the book and all of your, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, the main reason I'm here is because of my book, Abandoned, Chronicling the Journeys of Once Forsaken Dogs. I'm actually originally trained as an attorney. So I work full time, and I've worked on this project for over a decade, which was inspired by my very first rescue dog who changed my life and brought me back to photography. And I just wanted to learn more about what was happening to these abandoned dogs. So my first dog, Biscuit, set me on this path, and I've just become very interested in the dog overpopulation crisis.
Oh, yeah. I have a rescue. I never went to a shelter before when I got my Tilly McGee. And heartbreaking. And it's just for every dog in a shelter, it's a human's fault. For every dog that needs to be put down, you know, it's a human's fault. They have to stop buying and breeding dogs. The oodle doodles, and they're mixed with this and that. You know, it's like going to the supermarket. If there's 50 oranges on the shelf, that's the 50 oranges you pick from. And there is something very special about a rescue dog because they know they're rescued. Now, when you got your dog Victory, was that his name when you got him?
No, the dog that I shared with you that I presently have, her name is Victory. She's our second rescue dog. She's a Shetland sheepdog. But the first dog that I had, Biscuit, who is pictured at the front of my book, whom the book is dedicated to, that was our very first rescue dog. He was a tricolor Sheltie found wandering the back roads in North Carolina and was brought to a rescue organization in Maryland. And that's how we were able to meet him and adopt him.
So how did you get the name Victory?
She came at the rescue. She came from a rescue in Michigan, and she had the name and she knew it. And we kept it just like we did with Biscuit. He was given the name at the rescue and we kept it.
How old was she when you got her?
Victory, we think, was approximately 2. We're guessing based on at the time the vet, you know, they check her out.
Yeah, I think they go by the teeth or something.
Yeah, yeah. And in 9 days, actually, we'll have her 11 years now.
That's really amazing. Because yeah. Unfortunately, dogs aren't really living that long with all these, you know, illnesses around. You know, I used to, when I was a kid, my dogs were like 19 and 15 and my cats were like 20 or 18 and stuff. But when I got Tilly, they said they got her off the street. But when I did Freedom of Information, they had found her in a cage. They named her Phoebe. You know, they come up with all these cutesy names because they think that'll help. And I guess sometimes it does. But I didn't want a Phoebe. I wanted a Tilly, and I think Tilly had to have a middle name, so I named it Tilly McGee. I've had her 2 years, just 2 years. She just celebrated her third birthday, and I got her at 11. But I have to tell you, you took all of these photos in this book, correct?
Yes, I did. They're all my photos and words, yes.
And I have to tell our listeners, it's all black and white. It is so gripping. Their faces. I have come to think that the look of a dog's ears and their eyes tells everything. That's really their expression. You know, the way their ears move, the way their eyes do. I know when I talk to my dog, she's got brown eyes and, you know, I could tell she's listening to me because her eyes move back and forth, you know, and here I am, I'm talking to my dog, but I believe that they understand.
Yes, I agree.
Now, the dogs that they were different shelters, right, that you went to?
Yes, there was one primary shelter and then about 4 rescue organizations. And I live in the Mid-Atlantic in Maryland. So I worked with these organizations in order to photograph the dogs. Also, they were integral in helping me get adopter information so I could photograph the dogs about a year afterwards. So So in most cases, about a year separates the photographs. And at the time I photographed the dogs initially while they resided at a shelter rescue organization, I provided them immediately with a color image that does not appear in the book to help get that dog adopted.
And it worked. I mean, some dogs, you know, stay in a shelter longer than we hope. And all of the dogs, except for a few, we don't have to go into that because that's heartbreaking. And some dogs are returned. I just don't understand. That's a commitment once you get a dog. I mean, I take my dog to the dog park and there's one family. Sadly, he has to rehome his dog because he now has a child and the child has allergies. That you can understand, and hopefully they'll find a good family. But, you know, once you adopt an animal, the reasons we can't afford the vet care, we can't afford food, and I cook for my dog. One woman on one of my links, because I deal with a lot of rescues and I have a lot of shelters that I'm hooked up with, people would go through the trash to feed their dog if they couldn't afford it. And there are organizations, like especially near where you live in Virginia, there are organizations for seniors. If they cannot afford to feed their dog, there's a number they could call and they will help them. And there's some other organizations where if an elderly person, a senior, like needs to, you know, have surgery or something, they have places that could help foster the dog. So there are communities, if people look into it, that could help people so we keep the dogs. Because a lot of this with COVID, a lot of people adopted dogs because they were lonely. And then COVID is over or you go back to work and now you've got this dog. And there was even one gal that I had on my show, because some people couldn't get out, she was able to provide them with a link in their house on their phone or their TV where they could see dogs or see cats for comfort. So they weren't alone. But I think the biggest thing with the rescues is people have to stop buying dogs and they have to fix their dogs. I mean, when I go to the park, there are some, you know, male dogs, they're still intact. And it's mostly male owners. And if you say, when are you going to fix them? Oh, I'm not. I'm going to breed them. We don't need any more dogs, because the reality is there's too many that are looking for homes that if there weren't as many, maybe they would have a good chance. The shelters that you dealt with, how many beds did they have? Was it a big shelter?
It was. And just to give you context, this was a decade-long project. So I did most of the photographing in 2013 through 2015. And some of the organizations are actually not running anymore due to COVID, but a couple of them are. But with the shelter, I would say it was a medium. I don't know exactly how many beds per se space they had. It's a pretty good size.
Yeah. See, that's it, you know. And then there's some, because I have friends who go to shelters, walk the dogs. There are some shelters that you don't even walk. See, what broke my heart, because I had never gotten a dog at a shelter. You know, I had my dogs when I was younger, and then I got being single, then you get into cats. But this was a planned relationship. I wanted a dog, and I tried going through fosters, and that didn't work out right for me. So I finally went to a shelter, which, like I said, was heartbreaking. But this shelter, you were allowed to walk along, which some shelters don't allow that. You look at a picture. And there's some, even in the shelter, they have dogs that are fostered out, that they have no room for them. So they're on their website. But if I would have looked at Tilly on a website or a picture and not seen her in real life, I don't know if I would have adopted her. She had personality. When they brought her out, you know, I walked through and it said very friendly, you know, gets along with other dogs, which I wanted a friendly dog because I'm social. I want a social dog. And she is. And she's great with kids. She's not perfect, but she's great with kids. So I don't have any kids, but when you go to the park, there's always kids and they always run around and you don't want any problems. But then they asked me if I wanted to, you know, meet her outside. And she had personality. And that's when I decided, yep. I met her on a Saturday. She got fixed on a Monday and I took her home on a Tuesday. So I guess that's what you say, love at first sight.
Yeah, and similar to what you're saying, a lot of the adopters, because there's a narrative accompanies each dog's photograph, and I interviewed people at the shelter and rescue organizations for the first photographs of the dog, and then likewise with the second image of the dog, I interviewed the adopters, and a lot of them would say that they saw a picture or they met the dog, and they just knew that that was the one for them. Sometimes they would have dogs who had previously passed away and come upon another shelter rescue dog, and just was smitten, and that it's just kind of like kismet. It just works.
The dogs know. But you know, the longer a dog is in the shelter, and it depends. I don't think my Tilly was in that long because she looks sad when I walk by, but you know, she's in a cage, you know. I mean, people in jail have more space than these dogs, but they did have, you know, they're all on cots and they were clean. They really did take good care of the animals, but you could only take as much good care as you could take good care. There's a lot of dogs there. They need, when they get shut down by being in a cage, that's why exercise is the key for us and for dogs. They need to be taken out and a look-see. And, you know, you just see if the dog is for you. I think the eyes tell you. When you look in a dog's eyes and they look back at you, and if it clicks with them and it clicks with you, and you just think of, you know, early morning, I'm getting up early.
Yeah, I think you just know. And they do too.
So how did you come about wanting to do this?
So I alluded to this earlier. So my husband and I, at the time, before we had our daughter, we rescued Biscuit from a rescue organization out within an hour of where we live. And we just called around, and this one rescue organization said, I have one. And we didn't even see a photo of him at the time. And we met him and we just said, you know, we're going to adopt him. And of course, they do background check on you and whatnot. We were able to adopt him. And I just couldn't believe the transformation. You know, he was so shy. He turned into a completely different dog within, you know, weeks to months. He really gained confidence. He really came out of his shell. He began to enjoy his life. You know, he began to trust. And I just couldn't believe the change. And also the change within me. I had never had a dog in childhood. This Biscuit was, for both of us, our first dog ever, who happened to be a rescue dog. And he just really opened my eyes to why are these dogs abandoned? Why are they left? And I just literally, I know this sounds strange, but literally on a summer day in 2012, the idea just kind of came to me, this concept of trying to follow these dogs. And it kind of evolved over time. And I just really wanted to know and raise awareness about how not only does dog rescue and adoption improve the dog's life immensely, but there's also so many benefits to the humans lives are fully enriched. And so I wanted to find a way to, like I said, just bring awareness, because these are just incredible sentient beings. And I cannot imagine not ever, you know, I can't imagine not having a rescue dog. We will always have a rescue dog.
I'm glad to hear that. And it's true. They are. Your life changes. I mean, your life changes. I have a life in between walking and caring and being with my dog. And it's fine with me. But what made you want to, I mean, doing it in black and white was brilliant. But what made you do that? What made you decide that?
I wanted to do that, I think, because the black and white kind of kept everything. The black backgrounds kept the common thread between all of these dogs, and also really kept the focus on each individual dog. And they're all square, also keeping it, you know, a common thread, continuity within the image. And it really, I just thought it would really get to the essence of each dog. And I was hoping to help portray like a juxtaposition between the images, that you can see some sort of emotional, physical change between the images photographically. That is why I did it. Did it in black and white.
The really picture is phenomenal. That dog's eyes and their ears. That dog on the cover is gorgeous.
Her name is Sheila, and I thought she just encompassed the whole project in an image, you know? And I thought it was striking and eye-catching for people as well. And I also, I didn't name it, you know, like Finding Home or something like that, because I did keep the title Abandoned, because I really wanted to, you know, that raise attention to humans can be so kind, right? And adopt these dogs and give these dogs a new life. Well, at the same time, we as collectively dispose of these dogs so easily. And it's just unbelievable. It was kind of an unfolding with this project. I did not know how it was going to turn out. I just had the concept of trying to photograph these dogs in this way and see what would, if I could make something out of it, because there's no guarantees with all of this, right? I mean, I spent a long time working on this, kind of hoping it would get published and kind of just trusting the process.
The name is perfect. What was it like to photograph them? I mean, you did it at the shelter or the forest?
Yeah, I did them. So all the first images were done where they were at the shelter or a foster home through a rescue or shelter or at a rescue. And it was, I tried to make some comment in the writing about that with, you could just sometimes just see the real sadness with some of these dogs. You know, imagine for whatever reason, their life, they're the most loyal companions ever. And for whatever reason, they find themselves in these circumstances that no one would want, right? And sometimes you could just see hope. I just hope to capture them in a way that did them justice, you know, showing them in a way that captured them.
I think you did. Because, you know, we don't really know the history of the dogs in the shelters, because some of them are returned and then some of them are just strays born on the street and caught and brought in. So they really maybe don't know of a home. That's also something that, you know, people have to deal with when they rescue. We really don't know.
Yeah, you do. I was able to collect as much as I could. But of course, in instances, like you said, you just don't know the entire backstory. I was able to fill in as many gaps as I could, but there were obviously circumstances where you don't entirely know.
Do you think you'll do a follow-up?
Oh gosh, I don't know. This project was quite an undertaking, much more than I ever anticipated at its inception. But I don't know. You never say never. Right now, I'm kind of sitting in the present with this book and hope that it can do some good and help these dogs, because this was really the intention behind doing the book. It was one of the most, outside of being a parent to a young child, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done to see this through.
You know, I'm glancing through it now because you really do give a very good description of each of the dog, of what you know. And all in all, some of them have really spent a lot of time in the shelter before they're adopted.
Yeah, I wanted to point that out in some of the data I collected on these dogs. It was kind of astounding how long some of these dogs were in these situations for such a long time. And some of them, there were cases of multiple returns as well, even, you know, since I photographed them the first time. So they all have a little bit different stories. But I also think it's really important to point out in all of this is that there are really wonderful people who dedicate themselves to this work that's really important. Because without the shelters and rescues, we would not be able to kind of match make with these dogs, right? And have these great transformations on both sides.
Oh, they're angels, the fosters and the rescuers, you know, especially the ones that go out and try to, you know, catch them in the street and then care for them. And rescue is an exhausting, exhausting career, if you want to call it that. And then the ones that they bring them to different locations. So they'll drive one dog 2 hours and they meet up with another volunteer and they take them on these journeys. You see it all over. There's people who fly them from one shelter to another when it gets overbooked and they don't have enough space. And I think that's sometimes good, because sometimes dogs who stay too long in one shelter, you know, it's just not happening there. Maybe it's just the area, certain areas like certain dogs, and then they should really be moved. But it really is a spectacular book, and I wish you lots of good luck with it. And for anybody, the name of it is Abandoned. Of course, if this is in the window of a bookstore, you are going to get it, because the dog on the cover is stunning. I can't decide. You said her name is Sheila?
Yes, Sheila. Yes.
Her eyes are just, either she's begging for something or she's trying to tell us something, but she is a spectacular dog. And I'll tell you, your photographs are spot on, and you could tell you did a lot of work because, you know, with the shelters that you got involved with, the amount of time that they were there. And like you said, a lot of them were rescued and then brought back for whatever reason, sadly. You know, you have a lot of accolades in the book of people who really have appreciated it. What is it, you say in one thing, without a dog, a life is only half lived. And that really is true.
Dr. Jane Goodall, right?
Yes. And that's true. For the sake of all dogs and cats and all these, even horses, it's phenomenal, the amount of animals out there. So I really want to thank you for being on and enlightening us. And I hope that people do pick up this book, because this is something that we really have to address with the amount of animals that need homes. We're 330 million people in this country. Everybody should have a dog or two. We have two cars. We have more than one pocketbook, more than one phone or TV. So I wish you lots of good luck. Do you want to let any of our listeners know if there's, you know, a website that they could contact you for something?
Oh, sure. Sure. Yes. You can find me at KatherineCarver.com, and that's KatherineCarv as in Victor, ER.com. And you can find more information about the book and information on how to order the book as well. And I'm really grateful to have spent the time with you today, Cheryl.
I appreciate it. I wish you lots of good luck. And we'll post, when the show posts, of course, the picture will be on, the book will be on, and we'll include the website if people want to get a hold of you. Thank you so much. So I want to thank my listeners and thank Katherine for being on. I want to thank Mark, and everybody have a great day, and remember to live life unleashed. I'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.